Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Olaf Scholz is not that bright, and he is an even worse German chancellor. Though he is self-aware enough to understand and acknowledge some nations see double standards on Russia. Neocolonial thinking, it would seem, dies hard. Crosstalking the international order, I'm joined by my guest, John Rule, in Washington. He is a geopolitical journalist. In Liverpool, we have Peter Ford. He is a former British ambassador to Bahrain and Syria. And in Vienna, we cross to Alexander Markovich. He is head of the Suvorov Institute in Vienna. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Peter, let me go to you first in Liverpool. I mentioned the German chancellor. I refer to him as Sergeant Scholz. I'd like to relay what he said in the last few days. When I talk to leaders from these countries, many assure me that they're not questioning the underlying principles of our international order. What they are struggling with is the unequal application of these principles. Wow, he's a really bright guy, because that's what all of us have been saying for years, and he says it out loud. That is the problem here. We have the international community, which is not only including the West, questioning this rules-based order. The West makes the rules, and it orders everyone around. And this is an untenable situation, and it's all pivoting around Ukraine at this moment. Go ahead, Peter, in Liverpool.
Exactly. There is no respect any longer for international law. Instead, the Western powers have substituted this notion of rules-based order, which translated means their orders, their mandates on everybody else. And when you push them, you ask, well, which rules actually are we following here? They really have no response, because their discourse is simply to say, do what we tell you to do. And international legality counts no longer for anything. And this is why talk of Western values has now lacks credibility, and why the global South doesn't want to hear any more about rules-based orders.
Well, exactly, Peter. If I can go to you in Washington, I mean, it's just not international law. It's actually a civilizational difference, too. I mean, Western countries are so out of touch with how the rest of the world actually thinks and acts, and their aspirations as well. And so exporting their so-called values, which I'm from the West and I don't adhere to those values, the global South, the global majority, they find it very alienating, and why should they follow the West? The West are the former colonial rulers over them, and they know exactly what a Western diktat can come of. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I think the West has been really surprised by the global South's reluctance to target Russia for the war in Ukraine. You know, obviously, it's different across the global South, which is a diverse group of dozens and dozens of countries, and within the global South as well. But I think the West has been very shocked by the global South's reluctance to join them with sanctions and a lot of the other measures taken against Russia. And I think that was a bit of a reality call for a lot of policymakers in the West.
Well, Alexander, in Vienna, one of the things I find very curious is that it's interesting how the global South, the global majority, I like global majority, not only do they disrespect, as Peter has pointed out here, they're not as afraid of the West as they used to be, because they have their own assets, their own international institutions, and their own foreign policies. I mean, one of the best examples is how China in this calendar year has stepped up and dealt with issues between Saudi Arabia and Iran, has proposed a platform for a peace process in Ukraine. All of that's coming from the global South. It's not coming from the West. Alexander.
Yeah, this is totally correct. And I guess the braveness of the global South actually results from the new institutions. Countries like Russia, China, but also Brazil and India built up during the last decades, like, for example, the BRICS format or the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Before, we had this so-called rule-based international order of the West, which was basically a unipolar dictatorship around the globe, where the West tried to dictate everyone what he has to do. And he showed in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and in Libya what happens if you don't follow his orders. And this was actually the result and the reason why, for example, Russia spearheaded the concept of a multipolar world and started together with other countries of the global south, like China, Brazil, India, to actually establish a different kind of world order where also different civilizations are respected and where it's not like in the Western unipolar order, where you can only follow Western civilization, and if you're not Western, you are something below a human. And I guess this is the reason why now the global south is stronger than ever. And if you look at the economic data, of course, the BRICS are slowly but steadily outmatching the G7 states.
Yep.
And this means that the future will be multipolar, that it will be much more influenced by the global south and to a much lesser degree by the West.
Well, Peter, you know, when we hear this rules-based order thing, I mean, I've made many programs about it because it's so hypocritical and so nonsensical and actually very, very dangerous here. But really, this is a cover for maintaining hegemony. That's what it really is all about. I mean, you can throw all the cultural stuff and virtue signaling and, you know, as long as it takes, all of this babbling, but it's actually about maintaining hegemony. And this is what makes it very dangerous, because a hegemon doesn't give up easily. Peter.
Indeed. And the hegemon, their favorite weapon is economic now.
Yep.
After the Iraq war, the fashion now is to wage war more by economic means. And the main method is sanctions. Most sanctions operating in the world today do not have UN approval. They are arguably illegal, lacking UN approval, and indeed have been condemned by personalities at the United Nations. The sanctions on Syria are a particular case in point. The United States and its allies practicing sanctions against Syria could be taken to the International Court of Justice on charges of collective punishment, because the sanctions, contrary to the misleading claims of the West, affect the broad populations. And this sanctions weapon can sometimes backfire. This has happened in the Gulf when Iran retaliated when in 2019 under pressure from the United States, when the United States Navy was intercepting Iranian oil shipments in the name of these unilateral sanctions. The Italians retaliated by reportedly hitting on a Saudi oil refinery.
Yep.
And this was a pivotal moment and very timely at this particular juncture now, with peace breaking out between these two important members of the global majority, Iran and Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia realized at that point in time that being an ally of the United States was not an advantage, but a disadvantage.
Yep. Well, and what the Saudis found, and what the Saudis found out is all the expensive military trinkets that they bought from America doesn't protect them. Okay, the Patriot missiles don't work. Okay, they're not working in Ukraine either. John, it's an interesting thing bringing up sanctions, because it's really interesting. You can always divide the world in a lot of different ways, but there's one way that's really quite interesting. You can divide the world up countries that are under sanction by the United States or countries that buy military hardware from the United States. That's a very interesting division right there. And the sanction regime says it all, because you have to be afraid more of the U.S. Treasury Department than the Defense Department. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what we've seen with these sanctions is that Russia is not like North Korea or Iran, or even Iran, where you can try and sanction those countries. But Russia is far too big for that. And I think you've seen the backlash toward that with things like de-dollarization initiatives,
right,
and other things that are just reactions to the Western imposition of sanctions and the unwillingness of much of the world to go along with them. So you see these things like de-dollarization and other things pick up steam because, one, Russia is just too big to sanction the same way that the West is used to with other countries, and that it's just an unpopular thing to do right now because of Russia's role in the global economy and its interconnectedness with much of Eurasia. So I think the backlash is natural, and it will probably only increase.
Well, Alexander, in Vienna, I may kind of buck the trend here. I actually like the sanctions because I want Russia and the global South to move away from the West, from their toxic financial institutions, their coercion. It's time to move away from it. It may be painful, but I think it's the right direction. 30 seconds to you, my friend, and we'll come back to you after the break. Go ahead, Alexander.
Yeah, absolutely correct. I guess it's the best that the global South and Russia and their toxic relationship with the West, because unfortunately, the current Western globalist leadership is insofar insane as they still believe in Western supremacy over the rest of the world. They believe that their values are superior to all the other values and all the other civilizations.
Okay, Alexander, I'm going to I have to interrupt you. We have to go to a hard break. We're going to come back to you here. We're going to go with a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the international order. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the international order. Okay, let's go back to Alexander in Vienna. Before we, I'm sorry I had to cut you off. We had to go to a hard break. But you said something in your two responses so far. It's fascinated me that you bring up civilization. And this is something the West has this view that one size fits all. The world needs to be recreated in the West image because God's dead, of course. And so they're the new gods. They're the new deity. But it's very interesting when you say, when we look at the relationship that China and Russia have with Iran, with countries in Africa. They're all different civilizations, and they're trying to find a harmony, a synchronization that is it's built on more than Western values, which to me are completely fake. Alexander.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. The problem is that the West still tries to impose its values on all the other civilizations around the globe, and that he still believes that he's the only civilization. But of course, this is not true. You also have a Russian-Eurasian civilization. You have a Chinese civilization, an Indian civilization, and many more. And I guess the most important aspect of the upcoming multipolar order, which is now spearheaded by Russia and China, is that we come back to the agreement that there are various civilizations around the globe and that they all need to be respected in their values, and that you are not allowed on an international level to simply schoolmaster all the other civilizations around and tell them what they have to do. And I guess for the West, this is very good, since the current political course of the West is simply insanity. And when he realized that he gets left beside by the other civilizations and has to come to its own term and maybe also think about its own role in the world, maybe the West can come back to its senses and become a normal civilization among all the other civilizations.
Well, that's an interesting prospect. I think you have to have a reckoning before you even get close to that. And it brings everybody else down in the process here. You know, Peter, one of the interesting characters that we have on the international stage is Joseph Borrell, which he is, you know, I've never come across a leading, quote unquote, politician that self-owns himself every time he opens his mouth, because I'm sure you remember his comments about the garden, that the West is the garden and everybody else is the jungle. Again, you know, he just let the, he said the quiet part outside. That is exactly how these elites, these neoliberal elites, feel about the rest of the world. It's just a jungle and we have to reform them. And you know what? The Global South, they're making gains here and they're listening to these buffoons talk like this. They're not serious people. I mean, Borrell. Go ahead, Peter.
Yes, Borrell's language gives the game away. This is the neo-colonial mindset speaking, this condescension towards the rest of the world. The Americans and the Europeans pride themselves on what they call their soft power. Now their cultural influence. This term is also a giveaway. Power. This is all about exercising power over others. And it's not just the gap and universities and capitalism, but they smuggle in all their values, so-called values, with it, the first of which is subservience to the Western powers themselves. They've had a lot of success over the years, in recent decades. Thankfully, many of the Russians who succumbed to the soft power have fled Russia in the last 2 years. And good riddance, I would say, to a fifth column. But China needs also to be careful that it is not corrupted by this element of Western power.
Well, you took the words out of my mouth. I mean, I could make a separate program on how Western so-called values have infiltrated Russia and how people struggle with it. And it is a struggle, and it is not a done deal yet. I mean, there is a fifth column here, though their level of influence has waned considerably since the conflict in Ukraine. John, we can talk about Ukraine here, because, again, this kind of Western arrogance, and one of the things that I've made, I can't even count the number of programs I've made about Ukraine since the start of the special military operation. But the vocabulary of the West is always force and subjugation. They never talk about peace, and that's the problem. John.
Yeah, I think, over the last few years, I think it's reflective of the internal political areas of the U.S. where you've either got to win or lose, and there's no middle grounds, no peace initiative, because it's thought of in that terms. You have to win or you have to lose. And there has to be a clear winner and a clear loser. And so the idea that you have to fight until that is clear, I think, is very flawed. And it has led to a big increase in violence. And so I don't think the desire for peace is in the West right now, because, like I said, someone's got to win and someone has to lose. Many people would like to see Russia lose. They're going to keep supporting Ukraine, giving weapons to Ukraine to ensure that the war goes on until Ukraine is in a position that the West feels that they can win. But I don't think we'll ever get to that stage.
Yeah, I don't think there'll be much of a Ukraine left, okay? I mean, it's really quite extraordinary. NATO is not involved in the conflict. Well, yeah, I mean, Ukraine is being slowly but surely being devastated. And at what cost to the United States? Well, just printing money, okay? Alexander, one of the things, you know, I can remember months before the start of the conflict, on this program that has been deleted from YouTube, I told everyone a conflict is coming and there's an easy way out. And it was something that was agreed upon in the 1970s, the indivisibility of security. That's where you need to start. That will solve the conflict right away. Every country has a right to security. The West denies Russia security. And since it will not talk about peace, will not recognize security, the war will continue. Alexander.
This is absolutely correct. The problem of the West is that it's still striving for its enlargement, for the enlargement of NATO, for the enlargement of the European Union. But what it doesn't realize that even Western civilization has borders. And unfortunately, the West doesn't want to realize that. That's the reason why Russia was actually forced to show the West its own borders, to show the West its place. And this is the reason why this conflict actually exists. It exists not because Russia is warmongering, but because the West itself provoked Russia to a certain degree that it has, that it didn't have any other choice than to step in here. And yeah, the tragic conflict in Ukraine is actually the result of Western aggression, which didn't start in 2022, but already in 2014. Thanks. And yeah, I guess the best thing would be if the West would become finally reasonable and listen to the voices of peace, which of course also exist inside the West, be it the more pacifistic left or the populist right, which actually want to make peace and end this crazy conflict. And I guess it's about the West to end this conflict and not about Russia, because the aggression clearly comes from the Western side.
Yeah, well, Peter, it's because of the way the international order was designed, particularly after the end of the Cold War. The West had no checks and balances, and when a hegemon has no checks and balances, it makes really outrageous decisions. Iraq, Syria, Libya, there's no check. And now there is. Ukraine is the crucible. It's a check. Okay, and this is something the West cannot recognize because they history is linear for them. The ultimate victory, the entire world will look like the West. Well, that's not going to happen. That's a delusion, and Ukraine is paying the price. Peter,
that's right, and the peoples of the West have been brainwashed. I mean, I speak from Liverpool here, a city which witnessed recently the Eurovision Song Contest, which was an orgy of Ukrainophilia. It was grotesque and shaming for the city of Liverpool, which I love. But this is symptomatic. There is only one narrative permitted in most of the countries of the West. The peoples are brainwashed. There is no peace party in the past with war issues like Vietnam, Iraq, that there were big anti-war parties. This does not exist anymore. We call ourselves democracy, but the only choice is between Pepsi and Coke.
Yep. You know, you look very youthful. It's a compliment, you know, but I obviously remember the origins of the Iraq war. And then afterwards say, we will never make that mistake again. You know, we'll be very careful. We won't follow the powers that be. This is 100,000 times worse, as Peter just said. Go ahead, John.
And I think the rest of the world very much vividly remembers the lead up to the Iraq war. The whole global war on terror, which is still ongoing in many areas. I mean, we only just got out of Afghanistan not even 2 years ago. So to have this, there's no, you know, blank slate that the West feels it has, and they have all this moral rights or moral, right to impose themselves on the rest of the world. So I think, with the memory of the Iraq war still in very much the rest of the world's mind, I think there's been a lot of pushback against the Western narrative in Ukraine.
Yeah, well, if you have control, all the levers of power, social media and all of it, it's easy just to deep six down the rabbit hole history, even history that wasn't that long ago. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Washington, Liverpool and in Vienna. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, crosstalk rules.